May it please the court. I'm again Katie Allison, attorney registration number 39430, appearing on behalf of the Industrial Claim Appeals Office. I have just argued in the Simpson case, which was in front of you on the same issue, and my argument is common to both cases, so I will proceed from where I left off. I first want to address clarify one thing. The panel believes that the average weekly wage is tied to the date of injury, and I would direct the court to Colorado Compensation Insurance Authority versus Industrial Claim Appeals Office, 907 Pacific 2nd 676. That's one example.
Counsel, can I just ask a question over here? Can you just help me understand what the crux of your argument is? I mean, is it that we should revisit Avalanche or we should reinterpret it? Can you approach the question that way?
Sure, that's a great question. The Avalanche decision was decided under Parts A and B.
Could you just speak up?
I'm sorry. The Avalanche decision was decided under Parts A and B. It was a discretionary exception case. The ALJ determined that he wanted to use the discretionary exception, and your honors approved his use of the discretionary exception. I think Part C of Avalanche was more of an alternative discussion about the default provision, and it brought out disablement language, it brought out the second injury language, and it was perhaps some sort of attempt to sort of get the wheels of comp thinking about the idea of whether or not we've been appropriately considering this issue of the date of injury. I'm not sure that Part C was meant to be black letter law as applied to such cases as Simpson and Bennett.
So essentially you're saying if the question of discretionary whatever is not raised, then we should not apply Avalanche. It's this section C.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Your Honor, I was discussing the date of disablement being subjective, and I wanted to note that using the date of the precipitating accident, that's a concrete, objective, it's a certain way to base the rights and liabilities of the parties, and it is the most likely way to effectuate the intent of the act, and that intent is to assure the quick and efficient delivery of benefits to injured workers. And I direct the court to the case of Belinder, 638 Pacific 2nd, 645. A couple other points I want to mention. I think it's interesting that this date of disablement language, it potentially gives a claimant who is more disabled less money. The state average weekly wage, as we've discussed, it goes up yearly in general, but it changes yearly. And if a claimant is fully injured on the date of the precipitating accident, the claimant never has a chance to sort of prolong his claim so that the average weekly wage goes up for him. And so he could be more disabled and given less money. And unless the court has any further questions,
I have one question. I'd kind of like to just follow up on Justice Side's question. I wasn't sure about your agreement with her and where we wound up on that. Am I hearing you say that you think the entire discussion about the date of injury and with regard to the subsection or subpart C of that opinion was not necessary to the opinion and we should treat it as dictum and disregard it in the future? Or are you saying it should be limited in some way to its application to that case? And maybe those
Your Honor,
are the same. I don't know.
I am saying that at the very minimum, it should be limited. And sort of the disablement language better defined and the panel given sort of guidance as to how to apply it.
And by limited, you mean what? To limited, that's a legitimate discussion and we should treat it as the law and follow it with regard to the calculation of the average weekly wage? Is that the way you would limit it?
No, I would just limit it by better defining it. But I think more of what you're getting at is what I was talking about the precipitating accident, using that date being more concrete. And I think the panel would submit to the court that using the precipitating accident as the date of the injury is the best way to best effectuate the intent of the workers' comp act.
If we follow that logic, it seems that we should essentially dislodge Section C dealing with the default provision from Avalon. That's what you're asking. Isn't that right? Isn't that really what you're asking?
I think, yes, you could say that we're asking you to overturn Section C, but we also acknowledge Section C as a good sort of jumping off point to discuss how date of injury should be defined. I see that my time is up. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Paul Kruger, attorney number 34592, the attorney for the city of Colorado Springs. It is our position that Section C was dictum and should be dropped from the Avalanche Industries.
Could you speak a little louder?
I'm sorry. It is our position that Section C was not necessary for the holding in Avalanche and should be dropped. I'd like the unintended consequence of Section C, I would like to address. I don't think we need to reiterate the arguments from Mr. Canan and the Attorney General's office. But whether the court in Avalanche, specifically in Part 3, intended to interpret the act as promoting delayed recovery for the purposes of receiving a passive escalation of benefits. And I use that phrase, passive escalation of benefits, because I actually took that from the claimant's brief in this case. Here, there's no dispute. Mr. Bennett earned a max wage during this entire period. So we're not talking about discretion for increasing his average weekly wage. This is purely and utterly what maximum cap applies. And what he's requesting in this case was that, well, because I continued working during the period of this period of time and I was earning wages, and there's no dispute that I was earning the max wage, when I was at temporary total disability a few years into my claim, well, then the max cap should have applied at that time. He's also arguing that a few years later, when I was determined to be permanently totally disabled, the max rate at that time should apply. And the only way that can work is if Section C of Avalanche is applied to find that there are two dates of injury, the date when he was at temporary total disability and then the date when he was at permanent total disability. I would submit that that's completely unworkable, and while he maintained gainfully employed, the increases at that those periods of time would not be due to his gainful employment, but would only be due to that passive escalation. I can give you an example, and I'll admit going in, it's an extreme example, but employee A and employee B are working for the same employer. They're both maximum wage earners. They both sustain an industrial injury on the same day, low back strain, a typical injury. They're both placed on temporary total disability, and they receive the maximum TTD rate as of the date of the accident. There's no dispute about that. 2 months later, both employees are placed at maximum medical improvement, their temporary total disability ends, and they return to their jobs with the same employer, with a different employer. For purposes of my argument, it doesn't matter, but they return to the same wages. 2 months later, they continue to treat, which a lot of patients, a lot of claimants continue to do in workers' compensation cases, even after they've reached maximum improvement. And 2 months later, both their physicians, for whatever reason, recommend that they undergo low back surgery, which will require them to miss work for 2 months. Employee A, his surgery is scheduled for mid-June. He goes in and has his surgery, and because he's off work beginning then, his temporary total disability rate, he starts receiving his benefits again at the maximum rate. Employee B, for whatever reason, his surgery is scheduled in mid-July, after the state maximum cap has been raised for the state average weekly wage. He is then receiving temporary total disability benefit. According to the claimant's argument in this case, employee B simply due to the timing of his surgery, would be receiving more temporary disability benefits than employee A. What this tells me is that we cannot have a system whereby any sort of delay, and I'm certainly not suggesting that would be nefarious, trying to delay treatment to get maximum benefits. But if we have a workers' compensation system whereby you can time your disability such that you receive a higher benefit, that is not a workable system. That's not a system that is the quick and efficient delivery of benefits designed to get people in and get people out. Now, I'll admit there are situations when claimants are treating, it's the end of the school year, and a teacher doesn't want to have surgery, she wants to wait till the summer, so she delays her surgery. If there's a family vacation, you want to delay your surgery, that's fine. But if we can't have a system whereby the crux of your treatment is dependent on the amount of the benefits you're going to receive, and claimants' attorneys, for example, if employee B came to his attorney and said, hey, my surgery's been recommended, I'm going to be off work for 2 months. How's this going to affect my family? As a claimant's attorney, I could legitimately tell him, if you have surgery next week, your TTD rate will be this. If you have surgery next month, your TTD rate may be higher. And I don't think there'd be anything untoward about that advice, but is that really the system as we understand it in Colorado? The more fair and equitable situation would be, again, in the terms that was used in Avalanche, a snapshot on the date of accident. What was the situation on that day? Then there's no dispute, there's no incentive to maximize your benefits by delaying it, even legitimately. And that is the crux of the issue as the city sees it here, is that these claims are designed to come in, get off work, receive your treatment as best you can, and get back to work as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And any sort of a legitimate procedure in the Colorado Workers' Compensation Act, which permits someone to delay their recovery for purposes of increasing their benefit, cannot be the intended consequence of Section C of Avalanche. There's no discussion of that in Section C. Consequently, that portion of the opinion cannot be relied upon for purposes of setting maximum benefit rates. And even if, assuming part of the question that the Attorney General has at ICAO is the workability of this, in so much as what is the standard, let's say Section C does provide for new dates of injury. The standard is ultimately confusing because, even as the claimant argues, they're asking in this case, for the ALJ to fully evaluate and utilize his discretion as he sees fit in determining what the applicable maximum rate should be based upon the criterion in Avalanche. Well, Section C, we only get to that remand for that if Section C provides a new date of injury. And in Section C, this court provided that the ALJ would be bound to that date of injury. So, for the average weekly wage on that date of injury. So, in fact, the claimant himself is arguing that the maximum rate should be in the discretion of the ALJ, which the only way you could reach that point is for an ALJ to have discretion to decide whether or not there's a new injury. That's never been the standard in Colorado workers' compensation law. There is a burden of proof. There are standards for purposes of determining compensability, for determining whether or not an injury is the proximate cause of the original industrial accident. And so, and even more so, the discretionary provision, as discussed in Avalanche in Section A, rejected the employer's argument in that case that this would create unfettered benefits that could keep rising. The court rejected that, saying, well, the ALJ's discretion would be limited by the mandatory cap. So we have a situation where the discretion is regulated by that maximum cap for average weekly wage. But according to the claimant, the ALJ would have the discretion to set that maximum cap by having the discretion to determine whether or not there's a new injury. It's a circular argument which contravenes the basic tenets of establishing accidents, compensable injuries. So in this particular case, we would submit that Mr. Bennett, while it's terrific that he remained gainfully employed, that's a wonderful situation. That's the goal of every claim. But it's not ultimately fair, and it's entirely unworkable to create throughout the course of a claim numerous different injury dates, whereas we can take a snapshot of the date of accident for those substantive benefits. And even at the hearing itself, in the underlying hearing, his attorney conceded to the court, we're only talking about one injury here. These other periods of disability were all related to the original accident. So it flowed quite naturally. All his periods of temporary disability and permanency flowed continually from that original accident date. There was no dispute. And consequently, his benefits were accurately and correctly adjudged by the administrative law judge in this case. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Oh, please.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you this afternoon. My name is Patty Ragland. I represent the claimant in this case. And, Your Honor, it is respondent's position that this will create an unfettered, unworkable situation by allowing this avalanche decision to remain as it is. And quite frankly, I don't necessarily agree with that, with all due respect to their position. The fact of the matter is, this will, in fact, encourage stipulations between the parties as to what the average weekly wage will be. It will encourage an early decision-making process as to what the average weekly wage will be. It will encourage that if there is going to be litigation, then it be done promptly. Because if it is done promptly, then the law of the case will preside over what the average weekly wage should be in these cases. There is an obvious lack of terms of at the time of injury included in the discretionary provision. And quite frankly, the avalanche decision is probably ahead of its time, because at the heart of the decision, it is an adherence to the concept that it's fair to labor, it's fair to industry, it's fair to the insurance carrier, and there aren't a lot of cases that can actually tout that benefit. The fact is, it's fair to labor because labor will be encouraged to go back to work. They will be, as Ms. Campbell was back in 1993 when the case was decided of IBM versus Campbell, to go back to work, increase her earnings, and she will in fact be rewarded by that, because her family will be well provided for, and a decision will be made that in the event that her condition becomes so disabling as to put her out of work again, there will be an appropriate evaluation of the wage. It is as it was with Ms. Clark. Ms. Clark was in the same position. The only distinction between the IBM Campbell cases and the decision in Clark and Mr. Bennett's case is that Mr. Bennett wasn't a max wage earner. And as a max wage earner, the question then becomes, does the max wage statement override the case law that has been in effect since 1993. The legislature has had an opportunity to see how this court and the Court of Appeals has dealt with cases since 1993, and they have elected not to change the statute since that time period. They've also had an opportunity to review the decision that was made by the Court of Appeals in 2000, which was the Salazar case, in which there was actually an application of a wage rate, or TTD rate, that it was exceeding the max wage rate because of the COBRA benefit being applied. court and the legislature has had an opportunity since 2000 to again change the statute if that isn't what they wanted and that wasn't what they intended, and they have not done so. And as a result, we need to apply and give deference to the legislature to accept the fact that they would have stepped in, just as they did in the PDM molding case, if they didn't like the way these cases were being interpreted. It's the rare case that gives the opportunity for interpretation to the benefit of all parties. This does that. When their discussion is had about whether the insurance companies can reasonably expect the cost of workers' compensation claims if the max TTD rate is applied as it is proposed in Section C, they absolutely can. Every year, the wages of the entire pool of workers is reviewed and paid according to the premiums set and the calculations that are made. And so every year, the industry has an opportunity to evaluate whether that's done. They have to include the wages of those workers at the rate that they're paid, at the new rate that they're paid, because there may be a new injury. If there's a new injury, the statute prevails, and the statute says that the later date of injury will be required to be used for the max rate. So we have scheduled workers that have injuries to the schedule that can have their average weekly wage modified or their weekly benefits rates changed. When new injuries occur, we can have a worker have a new wage rate applied for a secondary injury. If the individual goes in and has a lower wage rate than the max rate, they can have their injury rates, their TTD rates, increased. The only one that can't have that happen at this point, unless Avalanche is allowed to stand as it are those workers who have our max wage earners, and they go back to work, they remake themselves, they create a new average weekly wage, again, that is still a max rate, and then they are denied the opportunity to have the max wage rate applied. All of the assumptions that you've heard so far this afternoon assume one premise, and that is that the average weekly wage rate will always go up. And that is not true. Given our current economy state, it is very possible that at some point our state average weekly wage might go down. And if it goes down, the claimants are going to be in the same position as they would as the insurance industry of not being able to predict that. We aren't asking for an annual increase. We're asking for all of the sections of the statute to continue to apply. The claimant has to reach all of the requisite requirements to have it reviewed at the discretion of the administrative law judge. And in the interest of fairness, then the appropriate wage rate would be modified. In the example that was given by respondents in this case, the worker A and the worker B, I'd like to respond to that, if I may. And that is, again, there are some assumptions made in that example that may not necessarily come true. That would assume that there was, under the fairness evaluation by an administrative law judge, that the exercise of discretion would not be utilized, and the respondents wouldn't be able to demonstrate to the administrative law judge that the only reason there was a delay was because of the claimant's actions. If there's a delay because of the claimant's actions, the administrative law judge would be required under the fairness evaluation to say, it isn't fair. You need to stay back at the other wage if, in fact, the wage rate went up. It also doesn't consider the possibility that the wage rate might go down. If the wage rate goes down, their delay in a year for that month might actually cause their wage rate to go down. And no one, to my knowledge, has a crystal ball to be able to evaluate what the future is going to bring, whether it's going to go up or whether it's going to go down. The snapshot approach is definitely something that is reasonable to consider, but when you look at the actual language of the statute, there are certain sections that dictate at the time of the injury. There are sections where that phrase is left out. There are sections that are discussed clearly in Avalanche that provide for different methods of calculation. And that is what needs to be followed, because the legislature has had their opportunity to speak, and they haven't done anything to change some of that since 1919. Much of it hasn't been changed since the 1930s. Nothing's been done since the 1990s. In 1991, there was a change to the statute that incorporated other employers into the consideration of permanent total disability benefits. Prior to that time, there was no inclusion of a review of other employment opportunities for the claimant. If the claimant is required to go out and look at other employment opportunities and consider those opportunities, and if they refuse any of those opportunities, they're not entitled to permanent total disability benefits, then those other employer opportunities should also be considered, just as they considered them in the Avalanche case. I don't have anything further, Your Honors. Thank you very much.
May it please the court. Opposing counsel's correct. No one has a crystal ball. And that's part of the problem here, I'm afraid. She began her oral argument by stating that this would encourage, having Section C still apply, would encourage stipulations and settlements. I'm afraid it would have the opposite effect. If under Section C, the next date of injury for purposes of average week, setting an average week of wage, is the ultimate disability, what remains to be seen, of course, is what is ultimate. And in workers' compensation, you can generally say, well, permanent total disability would be considered ultimate. However, there's no definition of that. Temporary total disability is ultimate in so much as you can't work during that period. So what injured worker, in a lot of cases, would, what incentive would they have to settle their case if they don't know if they have an ultimate disability yet? If they can keep their case alive, so to speak, continue treating, and just hope, and maybe I'm going to be perm total, maybe I'm not. I really don't know. If I am going to be perm total, it's going to be, if the state maximum will be higher, it'll be more benefits, maybe I should wait before I settle. That would be a very difficult decision to make. And that's why certainty is important, because certainty on both sides, when you know what the benefit is going to be, or at least have a very good idea, a better idea than if you don't even know what year it may happen, provides a little greater certainty for purposes for both sides to resolve a claim comfortably and equitably.
Well, it seems to me that in your certainty argument, it all runs on the employer's side, who has vastly superior resources to the average employee. Wouldn't you agree?
Actually, I wouldn't necessarily agree to that, Your Honor.
You wouldn't? Okay.
Well, I agree they have vastly more resources. I agree to that. But
they,
I don't,
can hold out longer, can't it, in the usual case?
It depends on the usual. If a usual case would be someone who's reached maximum medical improvement and they have medical benefits ongoing and they're continuing to treat for whatever reason, they may not be inclined to settle at that point because they don't know if they're going to worsen later on. An insurance company can't force anyone to settle at any time. It has to be approved by an administrative law judge, any settlement. So it's not a situation where a carrier can come to someone and say, you must settle now. That's simply not the case. A claimant always has that opportunity. And additionally, to the extent the
position... Could you respond to Ms. Ragland's argument that the legislature hasn't changed the statute since the early 1990s? And how that should be taken into consideration?
Well, I don't believe that issue has really been questioned. It hasn't. The maximum benefit cap has been in effect for when it was first set back in the 1974. And in Ballinger, this court addressed the increases in those maximum cap. And essentially, it's not directly on point here, but addressed the argument that, well, that's basically what they're asking for is a cost of living increase. And that the maximum cap, and they use the phrase interchangeably, date of accident and date of injury. It hasn't been addressed by the legislature because, quite frankly, we've been going under the assumption, I would think, that it's the date of accident.
What about the Salazar case?
I don't believe the Salazar case is pertinent from this perspective, in so much as in the cases here that we're talking about, when someone has maintain their employment and they're dipping into disability at one point and back to MMI, then dipping back into firm total disability, the only way the maximum cap can apply in those situations would be new injuries. And that's not something that the Salazar case addressed. The only way claimant's argument prevails in the present case is if those new dates are new dates of injury, which, as Mr. Canan addressed in his opening argument, there can be new dates of injury with the same employer. If there's been an aggravation of a condition, something along those lines, that would be a new claim for compensation. And that's a different scenario than a new injury. We're not contesting that a new claim for compensation would be the average weekly wage from that day. But that's a different standard than what the claimant is proposing here and what the Court of Appeals interpreted Avalanche to hold. We respectfully request that the final order of the Industrial Claim Appeals Office be affirmed. Thank you.
Yes, I want to thank counsel for your arguments. The case will be submitted and the